Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paul Emig, our Green and Gold analyst, joining us. Let's go call Paul, shall we?
Need the latest news and analysis on your Green and Gold? Well, we better call Paul.
Paul Emig, our Green and Gold analyst, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Paul, how you doing, man? What's going on?
Hey, Bill. Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So the other night, you got a chance to go to the game and enjoy yourself a little bit, didn't you?
Oh, very, very much so, yeah. And it turned out the way I think we all thought, I think the way we all hoped. And I did tweet this out, man. That Celtics team, especially seeing them in person,
yeah,
they hated each other. They had no interest in the season going any further than it did, and the Bucks took full advantage. And I think what's really incredible about it is they did, with the exception of however many minutes Brogdon played off the bench the other night, what, 14, 12? Mm-hmm. I never looked, but not a lot. You had, of your five starters this year, Lopez had a very bad series. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Brogdon barely played all of 12 minutes, and they still had a 4-1 series victory against Boston. So I've been watching this Toronto-Philly series very closely. I know Game 7 is on Sunday. You know, short of Kevin Durant coming back from his injury and the Warriors facing the Bucks in the finals, I think there's every reason to believe the Bucks should be the favorite now at this point for sure to come out of the East and beat the Raptors or the Sixers. I think that's probably going to bear itself out when you look at, you know, who the underdog ends up being. I don't think it will be Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And then if for some reason Durant doesn't come back or doesn't come back in you know, his normal self after that calf strain that looked more like an Achilles tear when it first happened, you know, it's very possible, Bill. You're talking about, you know, more than just a final appearance, if you
right.
get my drift.
No, I know. I think it's still tough for many to believe that that is a possibility, I guess, because we keep – there's still – and look, I'm guilty of it too at times. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but there is mm-hmm. there are times that you think, okay, wait a minute, Milwaukee could be your NBA champion? You know, and sometimes you look at it and go, okay, yeah, realistically, best player in the league, a team that plays top to bottom extremely well, waves and waves of guys that can come in and get it done, why the hell not? You know what I mean?
And you know how, like, okay, so, like, if we were to compare the Bucks' path to the Raptors' path, the Raptors have had a very, like, linear path where they get out of the first round, and then they got out of the second round, and then they kept running into the Cavs, but then they made this big trade to get Kawhi Leonard, and then maybe, you know, so it's like you can kind of watch, like, a steady arc upward. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Bucks went from can't beat the Bulls in a first series, didn't make the playoffs, changed coaches, couldn't beat the Raptors in the first round, couldn't beat the Celtics in the first round, even without Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. And then all of a sudden, NBA champion, question mark? Like, it just, you went from 0 to 60 in one season, and that's not normal, you know?
Yeah.
It usually takes a more 3 to 4 year upward path where you get out of the first round, okay, great. Then you get out of the second round, okay, great, but then you lose in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then you lose in the Eastern Conference again, and then you get to the championship, but then you know, and it's because, I think because it happened sort of, you know, overnight in a way, it makes it more difficult to grasp, but nonetheless, here they are.
I want to talk a little bit about this Green Bay Packers team. Tom Silverstein, an interesting article about the managerial foundation of this franchise. Give me your thoughts.
Wasn't it just like earlier this week that you and I said, you know, how much LaFleur must be looking forward to no more drama and,
right,
you know, to have, the Mike McCarthy stuff out of the way after he did his one-on-one interview and then after the Tyler Dunn story had kind of come and gone out of the – and it's like, okay, now they can just kind of focus on football. And then here comes the Tom Silverstein article where, you know, he talked to 20 different people, 20 different sources. And I know they didn't go on the record, and I know there's – people who are always skeptical when that happens, but here we go again.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about Tom Silverstein here. Now, this is
oh my gosh!
You know what I mean?
He's. I mean, I. he's been doing it, like, I think literally my entire life. Like, that's how long he's been at the top of his game up in Green Bay. So my point is, I know how people are apprehensive when it comes to, like, these, you know, anonymous sources and all these other things. But that, I mean, to my point, Bill, is to invalidate it then and to invalidate these concerns and these people based on, well, they didn't go on the record, is nonsense. So to be clear on my perspective on that. So there is, you know, another time here now where we have to talk about this reporting structure and this, you know, the whole idea that Mark Murphy has too much control. And really, I mean, if you look at the way it played out, we all thought, you know, maybe, Bill, I mean, if you were to put yourself back in the shoes of this GM search, you know, 2 years ago, I think in order, my expectation for who the GM would be in order, and I'm curious what yours was, if you can recall, was Russ Ball 1, Elliot Wolf 2, and then a pretty big ladder between 2 and 3, with 3 probably being Gutekunst. Do you recall what your thoughts were at the time about who you thought was probably going to win out?
Well, there was a lot of rumors that it was going to be Elliot Wolf. I mean, Elliot Wolf, and because remember at the time, Russ Ball was not going to be considered by Mike McCarthy. So when Russ Ball was about to be, or at least perceptually was about to be announced as the next general manager, Mike McCarthy was saying, that's not what I'm going to work for. I'll quit before that happens. And Mark didn't want to see Mike leave. So then, you know, we thought it was going to be Elliot, and they passed over Elliot, so they ended up going with Brian Gutekunst instead.
Who I think, so I think we should remind ourselves, Brian Gutekunst wasn't like a default candidate.
No,
He absolutely would have been and could have been the San Francisco 49ers GM right now. And he passed on that opportunity because he really wanted the Packers GM job, which, of course, he still got. But, I mean, all of this is to say, you know, when Russ Ball wasn't hired as GM but was kept on in a new, bigger role.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, McCarthy, who, like you had said, didn't want Russ Ball to be the GM, you know, it was kind of like a compromise. Like, Mark Murphy wanted Russ Ball to stay, gave him a promotion, gave him more money, gave him more responsibility, but didn't give him the GM title, gave that to a guy that Mike McCarthy preferred, which was Brian Gutekunst. But, you know, you're kind of like, you're negotiating. You're trying to play both sides. You're trying to keep everybody happy. And then in doing so, you know, you lost Elliot Wolf, who I would be shocked if he wasn't one of the sources in the story. You lost Alonzo Highsmith. You know, you could have maybe held out and tried to get John Dorsey. You didn't. Obviously, John Schneider was kept very financially happy in Seattle and was given an extension around that time to make sure that he didn't come home to DePere, where John Schneider's from, and, you know, kind of take over this franchise. So I think you kind of knew that there was going to be some upset people. And as the Cleveland Browns became Green Bay East, and more people, including Wolf and Highsmith, went to join John Dorsey in Cleveland, I think you kind of knew there was probably some pissed off people. And I think that's very fair to say. Now, I think the interesting thing is with the article is that some of those upset people still work for the Packers. And that's not good. That's not good at all. And it reminded me of the week before the draft when, you know, NFL Network reported how Mike Mayock and John Gruden had sent all of their scouts home. Go away. We don't need you tipping picks. We don't need you telling media what we're thinking. And I kind of looked at it and I said, oh, that's not good. You have to have more trust than that with your staff. And now I see this happen and I say, there's current Packers front office people talking to Tom Silverstein about internal dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Like, that's not good, Bill.
This is the other thing. People dismiss Tyler Dunn because Tyler's not from here, even though he did cover the team for quite some time, and all with the unnamed sources. Tom Silverstein is here. He's here every day, and he says all the sources quoted in this story have firsthand knowledge of what they described, but asked not to be identified to protect their jobs and professional relationships. In the NFL, those who speak out without authorization from a club can find themselves out of work quickly. So people have to understand what the sources are and where they're coming from. But it goes into a very descriptive detail of what it's like right now, at least what perceptually it is, behind the walls of 1265. And I think this kind of two things. One, it somewhat validates what Tyler Dunn said, that there are issues, whether you believe them to be big issues or small issues, there's issues. And that the other aspect of this is, you know, Russ Ball, while not getting the job, got the power. He got a lot of power.
Oh,
Mark
yeah.
Murphy's
mm-hmm.
got a lot of power. He just grabbed it and took on to it. And Brian Gutekunst has some, and so does Matt LaFleur and such. It depends on what you believe the structure to be and who's wielding the power. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. And I mean, there's two things to that. One, I find it interesting that one of the things Silverstein did get is, you know, he had obviously talked to Mark Silverstein. Let me be clear. Silverstein had obviously talked to Mark Murphy prior to this article coming out. And Murphy's saying essentially, well, not essentially, like literally, anybody who's saying that about Russ Ball is born out of jealousies. Wow. You know, like to kind of throw that out there and say, well, if, you know, Tom, anybody who you're talking to who's speaking ill of Russ Ball is doing so out of jealousies. Like, it's just, this is so, there's just too much drama. So
it's current, but what is interesting, it says, but despite the anonymity outside of the building, he is described as a polarizing figure by current and former associates.
So it's
people inside that building that are speaking out now. So if it's being born out of jealousy, the title of this is Cracks in the Foundation of the Management of the Green Bay Packers.
Mm-hmm.
That means you do have people behind closed doors. Now, not everybody in every job is happy with what they're doing. I get that.
Sure.
But to
yeah.
go semi on the record here and say, here's some of the problems, you know, if I'm a Packers fan, I've got a little bit of a red flag raised up over my head right now going, okay, I hope they win this season, because if not, all the cracks that everybody's been describing may indeed not only be true, but it may be something that we've been ignoring just because we don't want to believe it. We're looking at our life through green and gold glasses.
Yeah, and so that brings me really to the next thing I was going to say anyway, which was what the Packers need so very, very badly after a drama-filled offseason is they need a winning season. Like, not like 9-7 wild card, 6-seed winning season. They need a big, you know, NFC championship game at minimum season, because otherwise this stuff is not going away. Rodgers keeps getting closer to 40. These organizational cracks or the, you know, dysfunctional whatever, you know, it's not going to get better if you go 8-8. That's for
mm-hmm.
sure. And I do want to say, I mean, it's like, I think there are a lot of people who, change is scary. You know, doing something that we saw work for 25 years, you know, with what happened basically in 1992 or 3 with Ron Wolf taking over, whenever it was, you know, it worked for 2.5 decades. It's a long time that something worked. So I don't think we should just say, well, this is new, so it's bad. It's new, so we don't know, right? Like, I'm willing to give it a chance. I don't want to be one of the people who would say, you know, what is Mark Murphy doing? This is a bad idea. The problem is, though, when you start dealing with human beings and with, you know, people who have opinions and who are obviously willing to express those to reporters, such as Tom Silverstein in this case, and they still work for you, you know, you need to get people on board. And so if the change is scary for the outside world, that's one thing. If the change is scary and frustrating and clearly upsetting to some people who are on your staff, who are on your payroll, that's a whole other level of, I think, concern. So, again, I don't think this should all be dismissed. Like, what is Mark Murphy doing changing the power structure? Like, change can be good. It can be good. But you need to get buy-in from your people. And it's very clear from this article. And, again, former Packers front office members, I don't really care what they say. I mean, a little. I mean, you still take what they say seriously, but at least they're not working there anymore. For, you know, coworkers who presumably work on the same floor as Gutekunst and Russ Ball, they can't be. I mean, it's one thing to express them to report. They can't. I wouldn't even want them to have those type of thoughts. You know
right.
what I mean? So, like, Mark Murphy, if this is going to be the power structure, fine. But I think he has to get buy-in from some of his employees, because right now there's a bit of an uproar, and that's, again, the last thing this team needs right now after
right.
everything else has kind of been dramatic in the recent months.
Paul, good stuff. We'll delve deeper into it, but it certainly was eye-opening to see somebody kind of follow up with what Tyler Dunn had written that's closer to home, and Tom Silverstein,
yeah,
without a doubt. Paul,
sure.
good stuff. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay, thanks.
There you
guys.
Go. Paul Emminger, Green and Gold Analyst, joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You keep working hard, and they'll treat you fair. That's the way it's done. 844-PRIDE. Go to schneiderjobs.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.